Welcome to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk AM 1150, or perhaps you're listening to Blog Talk Radio or iTunes or SoundCloud or the website archives, dogradioshow.com. In any case, welcome. What a fine day to take your dog for a walk. And as always, a great show today. I have one announcement to make, and then we're going to bring on the bloggers of Do You Believe in Dog, Julie Hecht and Mia Cobb. And they are also hosting this year's Sparks Conference, which is coming up this weekend, June 20th to the 22nd in Newport, Rhode Island. Go to caninescience.info for more information on how you can participate either in person or via their live stream. Just real quick before we start our interview with Julie and Mia, just want to make an announcement. June 28th, Saturday from 2 to 5 p.m. is an event at Norm's in Fremont. Norm's Ale House and Eatery, Dog Friendly Pub, A Help Project, an organization that I support, which is an animal hospice organization that supports animals and their people before, during, and after the end-of-life process. A fundraiser there. We've got raffles, games, a book sale I'm selling at a very low price, a huge selection of books from all of the authors that I've interviewed over the years on the Dog Show. So come and join us at the event. Saturday, June 28th from 2 to 5 p.m. here in Seattle at Norm's in Fremont. Okay, so we have Julie Hecht. Now, Julie, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
You are. Thank you.
Oh, good. Well, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for taking the time today to talk with us and share with us the work that you both do and, of course, talking about the Sparks event, which is right around the corner. I will say that I spent the most time, I think, of any guest posting links to on our homepage and Facebook page and all that stuff. You guys have got a lot going on between the two of you, so I'm really excited to chat today.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So now, are you, you two are hosting the conference, is that right?
Yep, we are. So what that means is, every day, obviously, there's a different theme. So the first day is going to be aggression and conflict. So all the talks will focus on that. The second day will be about personality and temperament. And the third day of the conference, which is Sunday, will be science and training. So pretty much we are hosting in the sense that we're walking everybody through the daily events. We'll be very active on social media and Twitter particularly. So we'll be taking questions from the international viewers, and also, just as important, we'll be interviewing speakers after they talk to bring some of those questions to them, and then we'll be hosting a panel at the end of the day to bring all the speakers together so that we get some more questions answered and just bring it all together.
Awesome. So you'll have a full plate all weekend long.
It seems like we do.
Now, did you attend last year's conference?
Actually, Mia was in Australia, and I was here in New York City, and we both attended virtually, and it was wonderful, and so it's really exciting to be part of it. Did you attend live last year?
I was very fortunate to have it in my backyard, so to speak.
That's right.
Yeah, so I was there in person, and I'll be a virtual, virtual attendee this year, so.
Well, that's kind of the one of our main goals is to make you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
So you're interested in your questions and all that. So we're interested to see how it plays out this year.
Cool. And so you have together, you are with Mia Cobb, who actually lives in Australia, who is in the States for the Sparks Conference. And you guys have been hanging out in New York, I'm sure having a blast face to face with each other.
Yep.
And
pretty
fun. So you have a blog that you do together that is called Do You Believe in Dog? And you and Mia, who are both in the field of canine science, take turns writing posts in the context of writing sort of to each other about anything related to canine science, whether it be your research or research groups you're involved with or really any other random topic related to dogs and science. And how long have you been doing that together?
Well, we met at the third Canine Science Forum in Barcelona. And It was actually, this is Mia's brainchild. I am just lucky enough to be part of it. Mm-hmm. She asked me to join this joint pen pal blog with her. So I do think these questions about the brainchild should go to her. Mm-hmm. But we have been doing it since 2012.
Okay.
And the fourth Canine Science Forum will be in this July. So it'll be 2 years we've been doing this back and forth blog. And it's just been really interesting because obviously we're both interested in welfare. We both have a welfare background. She has a lot of working dogs in her experience, both working and obviously research. We're both interested in behavior, cognition. We're kind of interested in a whole slew of topics.
Yeah.
So being both researchers but also wanting to not just keep all the research to ourselves but to discuss it with a growing public that's really interested in this, this is kind of a nice venue to do that.
Yeah. I like what you said in one of your bio areas that you got in trouble when you were in school for passing notes, and now you get to do this professionally. And I'm with you on that one. I got busted a few times. One of them, I actually drew a picture of the teacher, and then I had to bring it up to her and give it to her.
That's your job. I mean, I didn't usually get in trouble. It was usually my friend Helena. But, you know, I was part of it, and now it's important.
Yeah, and Mrs. Cooper, if she's listening, take that,
that's
right?
That's very funny. Yeah. Mine is Miss Cooper, too.
Well, okay, I know, we'll that's what you, I was quoting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I said that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mine was Miss Spencer. She was, I think, our geometry teacher, yeah.
Oh, very funny.
In any case.
Okay.
So you are the manager for Alexandra Horowitz, who I interviewed last year and loved.
Wonderful.
Loved seeing her speak and her book and all that stuff. So you manage Alexandra Horowitz's dog cognition lab at Barnard College, and you're a canine behavioral researcher.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You keep going.
Well,
your turn.
So I'm kind of interested in, you know, your particular, it sounds like one of your focuses is on how humans attribute sort of humanized dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And, but what else can you say to speak to like your personal professional focus in the world of canine science? Like, what is it that really, you say all over the place, really, all I want to do is meet your dog. And what is it about that interaction that just really kind of floats your boat?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, okay, the short of it would be, I think through working with Alexandra, and also I started my research in Hungary with the Family Dog Project. So I was doing a master's at the University of Edinburgh in applied animal behavior and animal welfare. And usually as a master's student, you get to do a research project. So I went to Hungary, and Alexandra just published her study in 2009 on the guilty look in dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Hungarian group was very interested. The Family Dog Project was interested in doing a follow-up study. So at the time, I would say I was interested in this general concept of welfare. I wouldn't have said I specifically was seeing it through an anthropomorphic lens and trying to test those. But by the nature of getting involved with that research and then moving on and working with Alexandra since 2010, I have seen that it's very interesting to try and deconstruct where we're coming from as humans and looking at all the things that enable us or help us to humanize them, not really putting a judgment on them, but just examining them. You know, what is it about a pug that might make them more worthy of our attributions than a cockroach, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the what we would say, behavioral and physiological prompts to our anthropomorphic attributions? But then when I say I really want to meet your dog, I think the way it plays in is I want to meet your dog. I want to see who is in your life, because dogs are, you know, all over all our lives. So, yes, I'm interested in who we're so bonded to and who's that being in our life that means so much to us. But ultimately, I'm not interested in putting myself or my own projections onto them. I really want to give them a good experience with human beings. So mm-hmm. as much as I'm interested in studying how we anthropomorphize, I'm really, at the end of the day, interested in, when I'm meeting your dog, looking at their behavior and seeing if an interaction is even worth happening, you know, based on what the dog's body language says, and then respecting that to the utmost. And that's my version of meeting your dog.
Mm-hmm. Really focusing on the dog as an individual separate from its owner.
Yeah. Or I could give an example being, you know, the dog very often is connected to a leash. So maybe the dog does want to meet me, but the owner is uncomfortable with them, you know, gives a jerk back. That has then turned that dog maybe into a dog who might not want to meet me now because they've just been told something by their owner.
Right.
So I'm interested in giving that dog as most pleasurable experience as possible. If the owner is going to do something that might impede that, I will back off. So it's trying to help the dog have a nice experience with human beings because ultimately they are forced to live with us. Not that doesn't have to be bad, but that is their social system is within ours. So so that I feel like is my role of how when I think about welfare, I am thinking about it. You can think about it on a species level, but you know my day to day is on an individual level, and how can I give them the best experience as possible?
Yeah, and I think it brings up a really good point. I mean, what you just spoke to and your sensitivity to what you just talked about is so needed. This awareness is so needed to the general public because people are so oblivious to the signs and signals that dogs give us. You know,
right.
And people like running over and like, you know, putting your arms around a dog you've never met. And then, you know, in some cases, they get snapped at or even bit. And it's like, well, you know, what you did is really inappropriate. And, you
right.
know, so like just having kind of stopping and, you know, I talked last week with Patricia McConnell, who I also know you studied under and who I also definitely another all time favorite interview on the show about, you know, reading visual cues and just being better listeners to our dogs and being more present
yeah.
to them and understanding them better and how that impacts, I think, fundamentally their, you know, issues of animal welfare, just in general.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I agree. And also what I'm excited about with this conference and just even the recent, there's just been an influx of a lot of people who are researchers and trainers and, you know, working professionals coming at this issue of we have to look at the dog and trying to help the general public who obviously loves dogs collectively,
yeah.
but help them focus on actual behavior. And what I'm excited about with this conference is that really comes up on all 3 days. Specifically, for example, the first day, aggression and conflict, you know, how are we going to define that? There's just lots of talks going on there. Actually, Tricia is the first talk. Her talk is titled, "I See What You're Saying, Translating Conflict-Related Visual Signals." And then later on in the day, we'll be hearing from Michelle Wan, who is also a researcher who has been studying how people, what materials people have been using to even learn about dog body language. So if you're a professional, where are you getting your information from? If you are a companion dog owner,
yeah.
where are you getting your information from?
Yeah.
And I think that type of research will really help us because obviously we're talking about it, but maybe we should be targeting our talking in a different way.
Mm-hmm. Another really important point and something that's been, you know, a theme of mine over the years and even more recently, especially now as my, you know, as Sparks is starting and this sort of field of canine science is really growing quite rapidly. And I'm really grateful that it is because as a professional who works with dog training and behavior, you know, I have a degree in animal science and then did an apprentice program. And then really it's just been dogs that have been working with dogs that's really been teaching me over the last over decade. But it's an industry with, you know, even though there's certifications and people are able to put letters after their name now, it's not anywhere near the level of education in other fields where people get to put letters after their name. So this field of canine science that's really bringing a high level of education and a standard to an industry that has none. Well, not none. It's not fair to say none, but really hasn't had any. And even now, in an effort to create these standards, there's still so much disagreement and misunderstanding and misuse of, like, you know, what we talked about last week, like dominance, and you know, it's just the training business is just all over the place. So I'm really grateful that this voice of canine science is becoming clearer and stronger in the community, because I think that that's going to be a big piece in bringing that to an industry that I think really desperately needs it.
Yeah, I think I hope the same thing. And during the conference, one of the things that we'll probably see is, how do scientists and researchers even define their terms? And are we mm-hmm. even on the same page?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, why not? And how would it be beneficial in certain contexts to agree on a definition or agree on a certain type of method?
Yeah.
And I think to some degree, the training profession and the field of science, which actually after this conference, the as I mentioned, the fourth Canine Science Forum will be held in the UK, which is mostly for researchers or people interested in that realm. I shouldn't just say researchers, but, you know, we're going to kind of hash out those questions as well over in the UK in mid-July.
Mm, that's great.
Yeah.
So a couple words that you said that sort of popped out to me as far as what you love about what you do is the community aspect and really bringing the work of canine science, you know, not having it sort of stuffed in research binders, but really bringing this work to the public, about a subject that is very pertinent to the general public, because dogs are everywhere, as you said,
right.
And all of this information is so valuable to us. And there's so many, citizen scientist projects that you mentioned where people can actually participate with their dogs and help some of these projects directly and do these tests with their dogs and stuff. But I think that's a great piece of this, you know, community of coming together and communication, and where uh-huh. there is disagreement, there can be educated and respectful conversation around that. And then, mm-hmm. And also just having that sense of community is just important. I think you can apply that to anything, but I really got that when I read that you said that.
The other thing I was thinking as you were speaking is what this idea of, academics or a science community, we're asking so many questions. And sometimes people ask all of us questions about dogs. The questions are sometimes really flat. It's almost like, you know, you love this being in front of you, but we don't even know how to think about them in terms of asking scientific questions.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me is just interested in, you know, every study that comes out is not like memorize this finding, but it's like, how do we ask questions about the species that's right in front of us? And we're just kind of making stuff up or having like, wow, that's really interesting, but not really knowing how to ask a question or see that there's like shades of gray. And so part of me just enjoys pointing out the shades of gray in this mm-hmm. Field, and also how you, for a wide variety of studies, either online or in the many canine science research groups around the globe, can actually go in and your dog gets to be, you know, a subject that's helping people get a better sense of what is this, one finding in this general area that's kind of leading us to a better and bigger understanding of the dog instead of this very, I guess, two-dimensional
mm-hmm.
Perspective that we sometimes have where, you know, I don't have any children, so I might see children in kind of a two-dimensional way. Whereas, you know, when you kind of get this, if you study children or you study something, you kind of get this more, there's like a third-dimensional build in the back, and we kind of all get to populate that together.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just great work. There's so much to think about and find out and discover, and so many questions to ask, and so much depth to the relationship of dogs, because you bring people into the factor as well, and we are so complex too. There's just so much to talk about, and I'm so excited for the Sparks Conference, and I'm really excited to see you and Mia in action.
We're very excited too. Thank you.
As the hosts, I have posted all of your links on our homepage. So if you're listening to this and you want to connect with Julie and Mia and their work, all of the links are on our homepage, which is dogradioshow.com. And the blog that they have together is called Do You Believe in Dog? And we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to switch and talk with Mia for the second part of the show about the work that she does in Australia. And really looking forward to that conversation, especially about working dog welfare. So you're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice. Hey Seattle, this is Julie Forbes. When I got engaged a couple of years ago, one of the first things my fiancé said about our wedding was, "We need a wedding planner." I thought to myself, what do we need a wedding planner for? We hired Jenny Harding and New Chapter Weddings, and I now know there is no way we could have done it without her. If you are planning a wedding or corporate event, do yourself a favor and hire New Chapter Wedding and Event Planning. They did an amazing job for us, and they will for you. Find them online at newchapterweddings.com. This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist, and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a 2-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
This is Alternative Talk, 1150. Got it? Cool.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, and we're back with the other half of Do You Believe in Dog? Mia Cobb, who is one of the hosts along with Julie Hecht of this year's Sparks Conference, Society for the Promotion of Applied Research in Canine Science. And that is happening this weekend, June 20th to the 22nd in Newport, Rhode Island. You can go to caninescience.info and find out how you can either participate in person or participate virtually via their live stream and watch Mia and Julie in action and all of the great speakers that will be presenting this weekend. 3 days, and it's East Coast time, just a heads up, so I'll be getting up early all weekend long. Now, Mia is from Australia and does work with... is a freelance animal welfare science consultant, researcher, and communicator, and was the training kennels and veterinary clinic manager at one of at Australia's leading guide dog organization, and is currently in a PhD program researching the effects of social and environmental enrichment on the welfare, stress, and performance of kenneled working dogs. Mia, welcome to The Dog Show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I wanted to ask you, first of all, just based off of that introduction of you and sort of your focus in the work of canine science and welfare, and I think this is such an important topic, and I'm just so glad that you're focusing on this. When you're talking about the welfare of working dogs, what do you specifically mean by working dogs? What kind of working dogs are you focusing on in your work?
That's a really good question, because a lot of people wonder if I'm focused on working dog breeds, but what I'm more interested in is the job that the dog does. So obviously in our world today we have dogs as companions, but we also have dogs that fulfill, I guess, more utilitarian roles, mm-hmm. and they're the dogs that I'm really interested in. So I am involved, my PhD research is focused on young guide dogs that help people with a visual impairment.
Yeah.
But I'm also part of the Australian Working Dog Alliance, which is a national initiative working with working dogs from all the different sectors. So
We work with the private sector, which is farm dogs that might herd stock like cattle and sheep in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
We also work with guard dogs, so security dogs, and then dogs from the government sector, so our biodetection dogs, our dogs that detect firearms and drugs and explosives within the government, and also the police and military dogs. And then we move on to the assistance sector, so that's the more familiar guide dogs and assistance dogs and hearing dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have extended our scope to the sporting area because they're a group that tend to fall a little bit through the system. So we also include racing greyhounds and dogs that participate in stock trials. And we do have a very, very small area of sledding that happens for, the 3 days in Australia that we have snow.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's great. And there are so many different ways that dogs work. Like you said, a lot of dogs, as we know it, especially in popular culture, are the companion dogs, and that's wonderful. And then there's a lot of ways that dogs actually are working. And dogs and people have been working together for many thousands of years, and it's kind of the nature of how our relationship started together. And I love seeing dogs doing what they were bred to do. If it's a situation where you have a herding breed that's actually getting to herd, that kind of thing, especially with assistance dogs, which is where I have more personal experience or personal professional experience, because my wife Darcy Bolts is the founder of Healing Allies and is also the vice president of the Assistance Dog Club of Puget Sound, and very passionate about assistance dog welfare, because the media loves the feel-good stories about, oh, it's a service dog. It automatically is heartwarming and powerful, but there's a lack of sensitivity to the dog's experience and welfare, even in some of the best cases. I mean, and part of the problem is that it's totally unintentional. So really bringing awareness to that.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because a lot of the science research has sort of focused on the benefits to humans of dogs in these roles.
Yeah.
But we're kind of catching up now on looking at, but what are the effects on the dogs of us using them in their roles? It's great that they're good for us, but what can we do to maximize their welfare while they're helping us?
Yeah. And what are you finding? I mean, what are you, where are you in your research, in looking at ways that you can enrich their environment in all sorts of different ways? What are you finding?
Yeah. My PhD has sort of focused on a few different, segments within it. So one of the first things I did was to ask people about their perceptions and attitudes towards the welfare of dogs. I was really interested in seeing, how important the welfare of dogs is to people, because I need to recognise that it's not everyone's life passion that working dogs have good welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of trying to get funding for future research and getting things like government legislation in place, if it's not important to the majority of people, then that's going to be really difficult. But we were really pleased to find that, of the people that we surveyed, we have to acknowledge that they were people who selected themselves to do the survey, so they probably were more interested in dogs than the average person. But 95% of them said that the welfare of dogs is really important to them. And we surveyed over 2,000 people around the world, and the majority of those respondents came from the US, Australia and the UK, and there were no significant differences between those countries. So we were able to look at analyses of all the answers together.
Mm-hmm.
We found that people had differing opinions on the welfare of different types of dogs. So they perceived certain kinds of working dogs as having a much higher level of welfare than another type. So, for example, guide dogs were considered to have a very good level of welfare, and things like racing greyhounds were down the lower end of perceived welfare.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that can help us identify, where we need to turn our attention. What the community cares about. But it also makes an interesting point that if we find a welfare issue in the dogs that are considered to have good welfare, what does that mean? We might need to develop some educational materials for people. We also looked within that survey what role they were in, so whether they were just naive public who just taken the survey and didn't have any direct experience with working dogs, whether they were someone who had worked as a primary carer in a kennel, so a staff member of a kennel, whether they were a dog trainer, whether they were the manager of the facility. And we found some mismatches in the attitudes and opinions there, which is also interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So the manager of the facility thought that their dogs had a good level of welfare, but the people working on the coal front in the kennels didn't. Mm. Then that can identify to us that, again, either some education needs to take place or perhaps we need to look at some strategies to improve communication and also look at the welfare of the dogs more objectively.
Yeah.
And we can use things like physiology and behaviour to do that. So that's one part of what I did. And then I also looked at what happens when young guide dogs come from their residential foster home. So in Australia, our puppies go out with foster families for 12 months. And grow up, basically, and then they re-enter our training kennel facility and undergo a week-long assessment that then determines if they'll start the five-month training program or be rehoused as pets.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at how the dogs cope with that transition period of coming into kennels and going through assessment.
Yeah.
I'm particularly interested in whether there was a stress response when they came back, and if there was, how that related to their performance in assessment and how that related to their ultimate success as a guide dog. And whether we could introduce an enrichment program that might help reduce their stress so that more of them could succeed in training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's such a clear link. And I think, you know, anybody who has a working dog, works with a dog in a working capacity, my perspective is that they should be interested in the overall welfare and quality of experience of the dog, because it directly impacts their quality of work, just like it does people. I mean, I know I do my best work when I'm having fun, when I'm comfortable, when I like who I'm working with or for, versus the opposite. And I think dogs are very much the same way. And it's a big focus of mine with my clients and their companion dogs, just in talking about obedience training, is like, you know, being sensitive to the dog's experience. And it's really a conversation about motivation. And, you know, specifically what you're talking about is the impact of stress and how that affects the dog's ability to do their job.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because obviously, you know, with my scientist hat on, I have to ignore all those, you know, tendencies to think, oh, they're just like us and they're probably going to feel happier when we do this. And be really objective and rely on having lots of different measures to test things so that I'm not tinting the results in any way.
Yeah.
What we basically found is that dogs are really individuals and a lot of them have different coping styles.
Yeah.
And certainly in the work I've done with the Alliance, where we've, you know, met and talked to people from all the different industry sectors, it's been in some ways, you know, not surprising and in other ways a little bit surprising because to some people, some handlers and owners, their working dog is just a tool of the trade and they don't have the same emotional attachment that perhaps we might expect. And that was interesting to me, I guess, because I, like you, tend to think, well, obviously this dog's essential to your work, so it must be very important to you. But there's definitely a lot of variation in that attachment and, you know, in the same way that they might really like a certain motorbike or might really like a certain hammer, they might have just that kind of level of affection for their dog.
Right.
And a much more, I guess, belief that it's replaceable quite easily.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, it is hard. It is a different, I would imagine that would be challenging. It would be for me. To come up against that mentality.
I guess it's really interesting, and it makes me think about, well, how do we convince these people that they need to really optimize the welfare of their dogs?
Yeah.
And to do that, I think the best way to do it is to tie it into performance. So if
right.
we can say, well, you will, your dog will be happier and perform better for you in its role if you take good care of it.
Right. Well, gosh, very interesting and complicated topic, and certainly not one without emotion, depending on who you're talking to. but a very very important one to focus on for sure, and so many different types of job descriptions. And I like what you said, and I've said this so many times over the years on the show and also to my clients, pretty much every time I meet a new client and dog combo is just telling them every dog is different, just like people. Every dog has their own personality, their own preferences, their own temperament, their own genetics, their own history, their own, you know, all of these different factors that, you know, all add up to make them the unique individual that they are. And I think that's so important, just speaking to the dog training industry, again, saying that every dog is approached as a unique individual and that not trying to fit every dog into one way of working with them. And, you know, you see this.
Absolutely. And it's not always easy, you know. I mean, I've worked in as a kennel facility manager, and I would have loved to be able to say, you know, if we all do this enrichment program, every dog is going to be happy. But that's not the case. We really do need to look at them as individuals and what they enjoy and what helps them cope better with the things that we're asking of them. And that's regardless of the context, whether that's as a trainer trying to get a dog to, you know, do a trick or be obedient, or whether it's as a working dog trying to get the, you know, the most speed out of them or the most endurance or whatever role it is that we're looking at.
Yeah. What kinds of dogs, breeds, assuming, are you working with pure breeds, mixed breeds? I assume if you're working with farm dogs, you're going to, you know, you're not working with, you know, too many Shih Tzus or, you know, so do you have a certain group of breeds that your work kind of focuses on just because of the nature of?
Look, with my PhD work, it was with a guide dog population. So that's been a selective breeding program for over 50 years.
Yeah.
Primarily Labradors and Golden Retrievers.
Yeah.
Within the Working Dog Alliance, it's really everything. Some of our government programs recruit dogs from shelters, so they really are, you know, it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
Other programs have specific breeding programs. Our farm dogs tend to be either the Australian Kelpie or Border Collies.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a small number of Coolies and Australian Shepherds as well, but primarily they're the Kelpie or the Border Collie in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
We have cattle dogs.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
We have a great event every year here in Washington. It's called the Vashon Sheepdog Classic, and it's Border Collies and Kelpies in a trial. And you get to go over to Vashon Island, which is just west of Seattle, and spend the day on the rolling hills of Misty Isle Farm and watch these dogs, you know, at work with their handlers. And it's such a wonderful event. And I love to, for people, the general public, to see this relationship and to actually see dogs working, because so many of us don't, especially in an urban environment where, you know, a lot of people are living in high-rise condos with their pets. So it's great for them, I think, to connect to that kind of quintessential relationship.
Absolutely, yeah.
So you and Julie share a blog that was your brainchild, which is Do You Believe in Dog?
He dubbed me in my partner in crime, yeah.
Yeah. And you two have been writing back and forth with each other for about 2 years. And
That's right.
And how did that idea start for you? You were just like, hey, this sounds like fun. Do you want to do this? Or had you been thinking about it for a while and then met her?
It's one of those crazy things. When I look back now, I'm not 100% sure how it all happened.
Yeah.
Because Julie and I really literally met for 5 minutes. We barely spoke to each other. Uh-huh. One, because we both had a little bit of a hearing issue in one of our ears. So they were like, what? and two, because we were, you know, it was sort of the end of the conference and we just touched base and said hi and went our separate ways. And I got back to Australia and I was actually up at 3 o'clock one morning with a bit of jet lag. And I just started thinking, and I'd actually seen another blog in a completely different context. It was between two people that had been friends and were separated. And they were writing to each other about craft kind of topics. I'd stumbled on it completely by accident. And what a really engaging way to let people into your world.
Yeah.
And I think while I was jet lagged, I just kind of thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe Julie would be interested in doing this with me. I think it would be a really interesting idea to explore. And it's turned out to be incredibly popular. And we're not ashamed to say we're a little bit proud of the fact that, you know, we've been able to get the science that we've been talking about so much further than it would have otherwise gone if it had just stayed in academic journals.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as a scientist, if you publish an article, that's great. And if you're really lucky, maybe, you know, a few hundred people will read that article, but
yeah,
we've been able to have over 150,000 people read our blog, and that's, yeah, you know, that's really special.
Yeah, it's such a phenomenon now with how accessible information is and how many people you can reach, you know, via these types of social media and blogs and that kind of thing. And I love the blog is excellent. I mean, the topics are interesting. The topics themselves are interesting. Your guys' writing is great. And it is really accessible to the general public. You don't have to be, you know, have a science background to benefit from reading this information. The blog is called Do You Believe in Dog? All of Julie and Mia's links are posted on our homepage, and I'll be posting them also on our Facebook page as well. So you can, reach them there. Mia also has a podcast that she co-hosts. I've got that link posted on our homepage, dogradioshow.com. And Julie and Mia are co-hosting this weekend's Sparks Conference, the Society for the Promotion of Applied Research in Canine Science. It's a 3-day conference. It's going to be incredible. It's the second year that they've put this on. Last year was awesome. This year is going to be great. And I just can't wait to participate and hear all the great speakers. The website is caninescience.info. If you'd like to get involved, learn more about how you can participate, listen virtually. It's streaming live for free. You can also attend in person, too. But you guys have a great time this weekend and a great time with the rest of your visit with each other in person and talking dog and hosting Sparks. And I'm envious that I won't be there in person, but I'm very grateful that I'll be able to watch so easily via the live stream. So again, that's caninescience.info.
We look forward to you joining us on Twitter too with the hashtag Sparks2014.
Great, thank you. So we'll post all that information on all of our outlets. And again, thanks you guys so much, Julie Hecht and Mia Cobb, for your time today. And have a great weekend. We'll see you this weekend.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, bye. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with some announcements and an update on Lois, the old dog that we have been fostering through Old Dog Haven. We got her out of the shelter about 6 weeks ago, and I'm going to give an update on her. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
Now, Red, he's the damnedest dog that I've ever seen. Got a nose that can smell a 2-day trail. He's a 4-legged tracking machine. You can consider yourself mighty.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist and owner of Sensitive Dog, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedog.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a 2-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com. Hey Seattle, this is Julie Forbes. When I got engaged a couple of years ago, one of the first things my fiancé said about our wedding was, "We need a wedding planner." I thought to myself, what do we need a wedding planner for? We hired Jenny Harding and New Chapter Weddings, and I now know there is no way we could have done it without her. If you are planning a wedding or corporate event, do yourself a favor and hire New Chapter Wedding and Event Planning. They did an amazing job for us, and they will for you. Find them online at newchapterweddings.com. The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
Real people, real life, real radio. Really. Alternative Talk 1150.
A blue tick hound, she was pretty as she could be. Well, they pinned her up in the swampland about a mile just south of the gate.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk AM 1150. And we're just talking, if you're just tuning in with Julie Hecht and Mia Cobb, who will be co-hosting this year's Sparks Conference, which is this weekend, June 20th, 21st, and 22nd. It's a three-day conference all day. I believe it starts at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. So I'm going to be getting up pretty early this weekend to hear all the speakers. Certainly don't want to miss. I know Patricia McConnell will be one of the morning speakers on the first day, I think, and certainly don't want to miss her. Talked with her last week on the show. Great interview. Julie Hecht and Mia Cobb are the bloggers of their wonderful blog, Do You Believe in Dog?, where they write to each other. They're both canine scientists and write back and forth and really bring topics of canine science to the general public in a way that's really accessible and easy to read and fun to read. There's a lot of great humor that's in those blogs as well. Julie's also got, they both have other things going on as well. Julie has another blog called Dog Spies, which is through Scientific American. And she also is the manager of Alexander Horowitz's Dog Cognition Lab. And Mia has a human-animal science podcast and is also part of a anthrozoology research groups that's human-animal relationship. So those two are busy, and they are hanging out together in New York getting ready for the Sparks Conference this weekend. CanineScience.info. If you have any interest in dogs, which I assume you do if you're listening to the dog show, and especially if you're interested in science, but if you're just interested in dog behavior and how do dogs think, or why does my dog do that, or, you know, you ask these questions to yourself as you're hopefully being attentive to your own dog, definitely check out this conference. It's available for live stream for free, caninescience.info. So check it out. Please don't miss this. It's the second year that they're putting this on, and it was awesome last year. I attended in person. I can't wait. So, again, announcement that I gave at the beginning of the show, not this Saturday, but next Saturday, June 28th, here in Seattle at Norm's Eatery and Ale House. Norm's is a dog-friendly pub in the Fremont neighborhood of Seattle, and the A-Help Project, Animal Hospice, End of Life, and Palliative Care Project is putting on a fundraiser. It's an organization that I support and have been involved with. And it's a fundraiser from 2 to 5 p.m. next Saturday, June 28th at Norm's. We're going to do a raffle. We've got all sorts of great raffle prizes. I'm doing a book sale from books from authors that I've interviewed over the years on the show, or books that I've otherwise received as a result of the show. Some of them are signed copies. We'll be selling those, I think, for like $5 each. All the proceeds will go to support A-Help. It's such an important topic. Anyone who has lived with a dog or other animal, you know, cat or horse or ferret or, you know, any animal that you have a relationship with, usually part of the deal is that we outlive them and we have to say goodbye. And it's brutal. It's a brutal thing to go through. It hits people really hard. People are not, one, usually terribly very experienced or comfortable with the grief process. I mean, there can be complications in the end-of-life care for the animal, and a lot of times people feel like they either don't have choices or they feel like there's too many options and they don't know which decision to make. That's what A-Help is here for, is to support people and their animals in that place, before, during, and after the end-of-life process. So you can go to ahelpproject.org to find out more about the organization. If you'd like to just support the organization, you can donate from wherever you are. And it's a great group of people and great work and important work and a sort of emerging field of animal hospice. And it's not about, asserting any sort of specific agenda. It's about supporting each person and animal through their end-of-life process, because every situation is so different. So come and check out that event if you're in the area, June 28th, Saturday, 2 to 5 p.m. at Norm's. Tonight is an event at the Natural Pet Pantry. This tonight, Wednesday, the 18th, Joan Ranquet, who's an animal communicator, will be at the Natural Pet Pantry tonight at 7. I think they might be full or close to full, so you'll want to call their Kirkland store. You can go to naturalpetpantry.com if you want to try to get in on that last minute. I'm going to be giving a little talk to introduce myself and what I will be talking about at that location starting this fall. I'm going to be giving presentations in communicating with dogs, nonverbal communication, you know, how to set boundaries with dogs using nonverbal communication. Lots of really interesting topics. So excited to chat with the group tonight a little bit before Joan's talk and work as an animal communicator. And I think we're going to bring Lois tonight, who is our newest addition. Lois, I saw her on Old Dog Haven's Facebook page, and I don't know, something just struck me about her, and probably because she looks like a cattle dog mix. But she's an old dog, so Old Dog Haven is an organization that gets old dogs out of shelters and into homes. Such amazing work. Old dogs, I mean, any dog to see in a shelter breaks your heart. Old dogs, I think, is especially tough to swallow. You know, how did you end up in a shelter at 12 years of age or 14 years of age? And Old Dog Haven is a network of foster homes that provides homes and veterinary care for these dogs, who in some cases are very close to their end of life. And Lois had labored breathing, and they, you know, weren't really sure what was going on with her that was causing that. If she had something called laryngeal paralysis, or if she maybe had, you know, lung cancer, or, you know, one of the things that she struggled with was that when she came to the shelter, she had been in the shelter for 5 weeks. When she came to the shelter, she was incredibly overweight. So that, of course, is going to impact any animal's, you know, health status. And so I saw Lois's picture and I just was struck by her and thought, hey, we need another dog in our house. Four isn't enough. And Darcy agreed that we should take her in and foster her, thinking that perhaps she would be, you know, potentially close to her end of life. And that's something that we are comfortable with being present to for her. And we thought, we don't know how much time she has left, but we're going to get her out of the shelter and give her, you know, the best care that we can. Old Dog Haven, the organization, pays for all the veterinary care of their dogs. So if you want to get involved as a foster home, all you have to do is provide the space and care and love, and they provide the vet care. So that's an amazing part of the organization, olddoghaven.org. So we got Lois. It's been probably about 6 weeks now, I think, 5 or 6 weeks. And, you know, we weren't sure if she was close to end of life or not. And every day that passes, she gets spunkier and more energetic. The Natural Pet Pantry, one of our partners, has generously donated Lois's food. They really wanted to feed Lois their cooked stew, which is a great option for old dogs as opposed to their raw diets that they also offer, which are great. NaturalPetPantry.com. So Lois has been on Natural Pet Pantry's cooked stew and, you know, has been living with us and just getting great care and walks up to the park, which she loves. And, you know, she's just, you know, witnessing her settle in over the weeks has been remarkable. And also just seeing how she's getting stronger and stronger and more energetic and spunky and opinionated and, she's kind of like the grandma of our pack now, and it's just been incredible. I mean, her eyes have changed, her expression has changed, her body has changed, and it's hard to really find a better feeling in the world than going and busting a dog out of a shelter and just taking her home and being able to tell her you don't ever have to go back there. So highly recommend getting involved with Old Dog Haven if you're up for fostering a dog, or if you're interested in maybe otherwise being involved in end-of-life conversation, A Help Project is also a great organization, too. Again, Sparks Conference, Society for the Promotion of Applied Research in Canine Science. It is a group of incredible speakers that are all coming together for a 3-day conference starting at 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Go to caninescience.info. You can attend in person or you can stream it live for free. Mia Cobb and Julie Hecht of Do You Believe in Dog, who I spoke with earlier in the show, are the co-hosts of the event, and I just can't wait for that. So do check that out, caninescience.info, and I posted all the links on our website, dogradioshow.com. Thanks so much for listening.